This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
At the end of the 19th century, the birth of film would have had a profound effect on society. Hello, I'm Tommy Collins. In this, the second episode of Picture Perfect, we look at the Horgan brothers' transition from photography into their pioneering work during the early days of Irish cinema. The boom in the photography business allowed the Horgan brothers to work throughout East Cork and West Waterford, capturing the people and places of the area. The business would develop even further as the interest in photography continued to grow. Jim Horgan is the grandson of Jim Horgan Sr.
Photography developed into an entertainment. And I asked my grandfather how it happened, and he said he didn't know. It just kind of grew. So if we could just imagine it for a minute, if they go to a place like Killa, photographers coming on Sunday, so everybody gets dressed up in their best clothes. They all came into Tatton's Hotel. They're having a ball there. Somebody took out an accordion. Some were dancers. Some would sing a song. So it developed into a kind of a show in the evenings. To entertain them, they had stereo pairs, which was a kind of a device where you look at a pair of photographs together. So you look at one with each eye. A special little thing you look through, a special little holder with two lenses in it. And you adjust it, and when you do, you get a beautiful three-dimensional image of the photograph, which actually seems to be more than the sum of the two photographs, which is kind of miraculous. But it's a lovely effect. So they had these things around the place, and the stereo pairs people developed magic lanterns to go with the stereo pairs. So the photographers, they were in an excellent position to show magic lantern shows. And the whole thing began to snowball.
The advances in technology in the late 19th century would cause the Horgan brothers' travelling shows to expand even further. In 1894, another set of brothers, the Lumieres, perfected the cinematograph, an apparatus that took, printed and projected film. In the space of a few short years, the technology would spread to Ireland and have a profound effect on the work of the Horgan brothers.
Lumiere developed film, so you could buy an adapter from Lumiere for your magic lantern set and show short films, which was huge. They really now had a show with a bit of film, beautiful film by Lumiere. Now, he didn't sell any cameras. He only sold projectors, so you had to buy his films. But the French Empire was like the British Empire. It was all over the world, and you were getting beautiful little bits of 10-minute films in from India and China and North Africa, you know, Arabia, Sudan, all the French areas. And at some stage, too, recording came in. And that was a big move. They had these little cylindrical things. When the records came in first, the big Elvis Presley of the time, bigger than maybe as big as Elvis Presley and the Beatles, was the Irishman John McCormack, singing in New York. Now, he was the huge star. But Irish people then, of course, wanted to hear him. And when these little tapes came, they were able to bring these around with the shows.
Patricia White is the granddaughter of Jim Horgan Sr.
The photographs show the history of where they came from. So the first photograph I picked was all the equipment that was used in the magic lantern shows. In this photograph, we have at least 100 records. There's an old gramophone, wind-up gramophone. There's three or four of those. There's the magic lantern projector itself. We have the bicycles and different types of stands. I'm not sure what they were, some sort of cameras. So one of the most important things in it, I think, or two of the most important things in it are the two bicycles, because I presume they had to cycle to all the areas that they went to, places like Clashmore, Glendine, Killa, Ballymacoda. They went to Tallow. So they had to bring this equipment on two bicycles. Now, I don't know exactly when they got a car, but originally, they must have brought this equipment on the bicycle. So can you just imagine early in 1900s cycling to Clashmore with a lot of this equipment?
Buoyed by the success of the travelling shows, the Horgan brothers were keen to branch out into the filmmaking themselves. In 1903, they would look to record visiting English royalty. Unfortunately, the brothers had no access to a film camera.
King Edward was to come to Lismore, and they wanted to film him. They had been experimenting, but Lumiere wouldn't sell cameras, you see. He kept all the business to himself. So they had to make a camera out of the Lumiere projector. Now, it was a fairly primitive camera. There was sort of an arm going around, which blacked out. So you got a quick snap and then block out. You wouldn't actually see the film moving. You'd see a shot, black, another shot, black, another shot, black. And the eye can translate that into movement if you go more than 16 shots per second. So they were able to make a little mechanical device that would do that. And they made some film of themselves in Friar Street first. Then when the king came, they wanted to film the king. So they set up in Lismore. The three brothers, they were all about 6'4". And the camera was set up about 8 feet high. And the trouble was, you see, they could put a film into it, but the film would have to come out the bottom once they started winding the handle. So the only thing they could do was wind it up on a reel, but have Phil's hands sewn into a big plastic bag under it so he could wind up the film as it came out of the camera. So here was Phil with his hands invisible inside a black bag. But the police didn't like this at all. They couldn't have the king coming along with this peculiar device, a big camera, which could have been a gun, and a fellow with his hands in a black bag, and he could have anything. It was terrible. So they lined up the biggest RIC men they could get in front of the camera, and the king came unexpectedly too soon. So my grandfather, being 6'4", gave the man a shove and knocked him out of the way. And the policeman came back with fists flying, and there was a big scuffle. Now, my grandfather told me the story himself, and my grandmother said, "Don't tell him about the fight." And so I think I got a sanitised version of it. And it was bought in the newspaper anyway. But they were still fighting when the king's carriage came along, and the king stopped the carriage. And he said, "It's all right. I know what it is. It's the moving pictures." And he doffed his hat for the camera. And even the queen smiled for the camera and passed on. So they were very lucky.
The Horgan brothers would hold their shows in the League of the Cross Hall in Youghal, but the success of the shows would lead them to build their own venue, Horgan's Picture Palace. One famous figure in particular would influence the Horgan brothers in their decision to build the cinema, as Joan Horgan Collins remembers.
Henry Ford was in Ireland looking for places where he was going to build his factory for Ford Company, and I think he was staying in Devonshire Square. He came across over, I suppose, to get his photograph taken. And we have another photograph of a whole lot of people all dressed up outside the photographic studio. Anyway, he must have been chatting to my grandfather. That's a story my father told me now. And he said, "Look, if you have any money at all, cinema's the thing to get into." I'm not sure whether he said, "Borrow the money, even if you don't have it, or if you have money, put it into it." So they took his advice and they built the cinema.
Jim Horgan is the grandson of Jim Horgan Sr.
Our cousins Callahan's built it in brick. And it took years to build, but they started, I think, about 1914. And just as they started, there was a big fire, I think, in Dunmanway, in an attic where the film actually went on fire, and people, about 30 people, were killed in the fire. So a law was passed straight away that you had to have a specially built cinema to show films because of the fire danger. Because the film was highly inflammable. It was almost an explosive. And they were making their own gas and burning the gas, so you had a naked flame. It was bound to happen. So they started it up. It was very good. They're beautiful machines, one of which I still have. It's mine. It's in the Irish Film Institute, but I still own it. And originally it was hand-turned with lime light. And then it was changed over to burning carbons. Two electrodes of carbon would come together like two fingers and make an enormous spark between the two of them. But they built their own cinema in Friar Street and lived in it and showed films every night. And it developed on from silent films then into... It was a live show as well as a film.
Joan During the making of this programme, we exhibited some of the brothers' film work and some of the materials related to the cinema at your library.
It's an amazing thing. When I was in college, I actually ran one of those cameras that they had for projector, and one of the brothers said there about the way it works, and I'm kind of familiar with it. It was really interesting. And then, of course, they added another piece to it for the sound on the same film, and it's all progression.
I used to show 16mm films myself years and years ago down the ring to the kids who were supposed to be learning Gaelic. I brought them now in Yankee films. That was lovely.
Brings back memories. I spent all my days nearly in the movies, Harrigan's Theatre. We learn from it, cowboys.
My recollection of that place in the early 60s when I was around 10 maybe, less than 10, sneaking into the pictures over the wall. And there was a wall outside the back and it used to shake, and you climbed the wall to go to the pictures and you were wondering, were you going to go home in an ambulance or would you get into the pictures? But that's the way it was. Fond memories of the place, fond memories.
The early days of Horgan's Picture Palace would not only feature exhibitions of films from abroad, but also feature the brothers' own films.
To get an audience in, the best way to do it is have the people themselves on screen. So they filmed big events like Corpus Christi processions. They did one lovely one of people coming out the church gate, which means that everybody in the town was on screen in Yall. They were all film stars. And it was a lovely piece of film. And they filmed local events like that, which are very highly valued now in the film community. They're the real thing. And the Horgans, being orphans and being faced with poverty, they photographed everyone. You know, whether you were rich or poor, you were in the photograph. So their street scenes have little barefoot urchins, real characters coming right out of them. They had even a kind of a newsreel called the Yall Gazette, which they showed local events. There's a pretty scary little bit of film, very poor quality, of a Scottish regiment with guns and full Scottish uniform coming down under the clockade, and they're pretty fearful looking. You would not challenge them. Yeah, and a lovely one of the opposite side of an excursion up the Blackwater on a steamer. So there's lovely, lovely history tied up there.
The films made by the Horgan brothers would capture a number of events in East Cork and West Waterford. Jim Horgan Sr.'s granddaughter, Mary McAuliffe, describes these early films.
It gives a great idea of the people living in the time. There's one snippet in it, and it's called Comrades of the Great War. I heard somewhere that about 80 people from Yall were killed in the Great War. There are snippets from North Abbey Bend, St. Declan's Well and the Patron in Ardmore. I love that because it shows the costumes, it shows the ladies are there with the beautiful dresses and fabulous hats. And of course, they all have their parasols to keep the sun off. And some of them are just sitting behind a wall, and then they realise that some of the people are coming down, having done the rounds, I think they called it. Then they get up and they get excited and call the others, and they're looking at who's coming. The numbers of people in this film, there are crowds and crowds of people. And it's lovely. I just love seeing the costumes. I think I should have been born then anyway. The races in Frogmore. I'd love to find out more about that because it's just a snippet and the crowds there are huge again. But you do see some of the horses running through and you see another snippet at the end of the finish line. And I'd really love somebody to tell me about that. Great pieces from the Strand. Crowds and crowds of people just on the beach. Nobody's in swimming. They're just kids maybe paddling and everybody's fully clothed. And there are bathing boxes up at the top of the beach. And then there's suddenly a scene where all these young boys run hell for leather into the sea and they're splashing around. I think it was an outing from an orphanage. There's a little piece on the dedication of St. Edith's Church in Gortrue, and I think they recently celebrated their 100th anniversary. I love the piece where there's a fire in the town hall, and it was in the days when that I remembered the town hall from my childhood, where the huge trees were lining the wall and there was a gate in the centre. Now, of course, that would be the middle of the street. That wall would probably be running down the middle of the street, where the middle of the street is now. But I didn't really appreciate anything like this when I was growing up. But I would love people to see it. But it would be lovely to know more about it.
Today, the existing films made by the Horgan brothers have been preserved by the Irish Film Institute's Irish Film Archive. Suniva O'Flynn is the IFI's curator.
A good deal of our understanding of the film history from this period in Ireland is based on what films have survived. So we know that there was local topical production in Ireland because the Horgan collection arrived on the doorstep. The fact is that a lot of film material from this period disappeared because it was nitrate, also because maybe it wasn't deemed interesting enough. So material that might have been of political or historical interest would have been salvaged and preserved in archives in the UK. We do know that there were some local operators making other films. We know of British Newsreel Production, we know of Pathé, British Movietone, Viz News. We also know of formal Irish newsreel production coming out of Dublin. There was the Irish Events Newsreel that ran from 1915 to 1919. But what the Horgan seems to represent is this other strand of film production that isn't fiction, that isn't newsreel for national distribution, but is newsreel magazine style production for local consumption. And in that, it's recording a social life, material of folkloric and ethnographic interest that might not have been deemed worthy of a professional newsreel cameraman. So it really adds texture to our understanding of life in Ireland in the teens, because we see people going about their leisure activities. We see people visiting St. Declan's Well. We see people going to the beach. These kinds of activities that are not going to appear in British Pathé News, why would they? So it really is important in that regard. It's filling in the picture of what life was like in Ireland.
Cian O'Shea works at the Cork Film Archive.
If anyone is ever to make a history of filmmaking here in Cork, they should certainly be central to that. They were probably the earliest local filmmakers. All the people that went on holiday, even for maybe a day or so, going down by train, if the day was anyway wet, what could they do except go to the picture house? And in the picture house, they could have seen any of these Yall Gazette news items. It might have been the local Sinn Féin marches, with all the people with their tricolours and everything. But they did record members of both sides as well. They really didn't favour any side, if you like. They were interested in providing entertainment, more than anything else, maybe.
The Horgan brothers' experimentation with the moving image was not limited to film, but also included animation, as Jim Horgan remembers.
My grandfather was experimenting with it, and he decided to do a photograph of the main street in Yall with the river flowing down through it and boats coming and going. But trying to get the boats to move with the actions of people inside was too much. So he decided just to make the clock 8 do a little dance instead. And he took the boats out. And that probably the world's first animation. The clock 8 did a little dance, stood on its head, and then ran away out the harbour and waved to everyone as it went off. There's only a few seconds of it left, but it's quite famous. The French Film Institute used it for their exams this year. They put up a prize and said, start off with the little clock 8 in Yall, and they do an Irish theme. So it was kind of a gesture to my grandfather as recognition that he existed anyway.
The early cinematic experience was far different from the one we know today, with the focus more on variety. Shows would feature newsreels, silent films, slide presentations and sing-alongs. Much of the music for these shows would be provided by the Horgan's Picture Theatre Orchestra.
Film would have been quite good by then, silent films. and the orchestra was quite good, played with them. Maisie played the piano. She was a girl from Cove O'Sullivan. She married Ted Horgan. And my grandmother played the piano, and my grandfather played the banjo and the mandolin, guitar. Sylvie Rohan, for a while, played the violin. I was a drummer. He was come over from Old Parish, a teacher. Cyril Farrell, cycled over all from Dungarvan every day. And the orchestra was there till 1950-something. But it was there because it had to be there in the silent films. It was there as a tax avoidance in the 1950s because there was an entertainment tax on pure film. But if half the show was live, then you didn't pay entertainment tax. So they kept up a live show every night. Even up to my time, there was a lot of singing going on. I remember when I was 2 years old, I was brought up to the cinema at 8:30, and Maisie was looking for requests, and I asked for the Teddy Bear's Picnic, which is a bitch to play on the piano. There's all sort of black notes in it, you know what I mean? But she bashed it out for me anyway. I was taken home to bed then afterwards.
The Horgan Picture Palace could seat 600 people, with upholstered seating at the back and wooden benches known as the gods at the front. Mikey Roach started work in the cinema in 1951 and describes its layout.
People often wonder how did they get the name of the gods. You often heard that. Well, there was an old saying, going back to the early theatre days. The saying was, 'tis in the lap of the gods. The gods was the lower class of people. Then you had the upper class. It had to do with plays. It went back that far. The play wasn't much good. The lower crowd would let you know it fast enough. They could boo you off the stage or they could throw things at you. But if you could please them, it was a complete success. Because the upper class, they'd never let you know that it was bad or anything else. They'd only talk of it behind their back, you know. Actually, in Horgan's, we were 28 feet behind the screen. If the screen is taken down, what you see is a brick wall and a portholes in it. The same as if you were looking back at an Orney cinema. The reason for the rear projection is Horgan's cinema was too long. Usually in a place like that, where you have a long hall, what they do is halfway back, they have the projection box overhead. Those projectors that Horgan's had, they came from Germany. And they had a special lens. You had a short focus lens. It had to make the picture large at a short distance. They had a skylight at the back in the roof. And a strange thing about it, the clouds passing in the sky, it used to come out on the screen. It was a kind of a, what you call pinhole photography. So just by chance, you know. But you see the paintings around the wall. They were done by old Jim Horgan and Ted Horgan. You see, they done marvellous paintings. I mean, to paint a scene that size, and it must have taken him a long time. They were marvellous people, you know. They were ahead of their day, they were. I remember going there now only 7 years of age. Well, the cinema then was, that was the thing at that time, the cinema. See, what people don't realise is it was a cinema-educated Ireland, not television. People never knew what other lands were like, only from sailors coming back home, and they weren't educated enough to tell them anything about it. Like my father now was 14 years on the northwest frontier of India, but if he was alive today, I could tell him more about India than he could tell me. And I was never outside the country. Cinema brought the world to the people's eyes.
Horgan's Picture Palace will provide great entertainment not only to the people of Youghal, but also to the Horgan children who grew up with the building as part of their lives. Patricia White is the granddaughter of Jim Horgan Sr.
My father was actually born in the cinema. They lived in cinema at the start. So they had their bedroom on one side of the projection room. And they put a little hole in the wall so that they could see the films. One of my earliest memories is a very frightening one, because it was the first showing of Ben-Hur, and my father was very excited about it. He was dying to see this big film. So we went up to see Ben-Hur, and the cinema was a rear projecting. It was like a little cinema behind the cinema, which you saw everything back to front. Over at the side of the cinema were two little seats where maybe the projectionist sat. We were never allowed up there as children, because you see a shadow on the film if you walked across. So my father brought me up there, and the two of us sat down in the two little seats over at the side, and something happened, something went wrong with the film. So he had to go and help Mikey with whatever the problem was. So he said to me, I think I was only about 4 or 5, he said, you must sit there and you must not move. Don't move whatever you do, because it would be dangerous to move. So he left me there, and I was so scared, because next thing the whole Roman army was coming towards me. There was fellas in chariots, and there was fellas with these funny helmets, and there were horses and chariots, and the whole Roman army was coming straight towards me. I was only 4 years old. I was terrified. So I was hanging onto the seat by the time he got back.
Mary McAuliffe remembers.
We played in the cinema. We played hide and seek between the seats, and whenever we got a chance. Of course, you know, kids would get more boisterous and more boisterous and more boisterous, so they'd hear the noise, and then there would be a little bit of trouble. We'd be told to get out.
Joan Horgan Collins.
This was part of our lives growing up, and we didn't think that we were in any way different to other children. There always have been about two rows of maybe 20 seats reserved for the grandchildren and their friends and whoever else might be with them. And I don't know how they made any money, because like we'd always have had 2 or 3 friends each. It was just part of our lives, really. We probably didn't think of other children not having what we had.
During the making of this programme, we exhibited some of the materials related to Horgan's Picture Palace at Yeo Library.
Horgan's were famous because when I came from Castlemartyr, the two locations in Yeo at the time would have been the Showboat for Dancing and the Horgan Cinemas. And the people at that time would have cycled. So the Horgan name was always a big name, like, because you went to Horgan's for the pictures.
Well, we normally went on a Wednesday afternoon to the matinee, we used to call it, if you had the money. And I always remember Sissy Fitch, she had her own corner there in the gods. And if there was a cowboy film or a horror film on, Sissy would be there. Oh, geez, he's coming up behind you, look out. She was really living it. A cowboy film, oh, he's going to shoot him. Look around, he's behind you. She used to carry on.
I can remember one of the first films that I saw there actually was The Great Caruso. And I think I must have been only about 12, you know, at the time. But I can remember it was a terrific film, and the singing in it and everything made a great impression on me. As I got older, of course, and started going out with boys and it got even more interesting.
It did. The back seats, I remember the double seats, yeah.
And, yeah.
The Horgan cinema business would start to enter into decline in the 1960s, as Jim Horgan remembers.
With television in the 1960s, the big audiences were gone. If you take some of the big films, you know, like Ten Commandments or Reap the Wild Wind, which was a huge film, it was packed up to the back, 600 people in the cinema. But those days were gone, and the audiences were getting smaller. Television was new and novelty, and they were beginning to get into debt with the bank. And at that time, a conglomerate took over, a Ward Anderson conglomerate. So they went into partnership with them and just barely managed to keep alive that way. So that was really, it went downhill from that.
The Horgan's legacy in filmmaking and exhibition and their work in photography will provide a treasure trove of historical artefacts that chronicle the life and times of East Cork and West Waterford from the late 19th into the 20th century. In the final episode of Picture Perfect, we look at the work being done to preserve the Horgan brothers' work and their legacy. Picture Perfect is a Community Radio Youghal production. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.